Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode. High dosing PEDs in prep. Is this the way to go, or should you use less in prep? So conversation that has come up, and Luke and I are going to dive into how should we be scaling PEDs around prep and what are the consideration points for this. Luke, how are you doing today?
I'm great. This is a interesting topic. There's some generalities in regards to needs that need to be covered in order to kind of map this out well, which we'll hit today. But I think there is a bro dialogue attached to this topic as well that I think could, you know, serve as some of the launch points for some of our logic into why we think that might not be the exact case in a lot of scenarios. And it's prep, it's more hardcore. If you're more hardcore, you run more drugs, right? And that's potentially from a misguided thought of what the goal prep should be, because you're growing into the show, baby, and they're Ronnie Coleman throwing these dumbbells like lightweight, and in reality have like a little bit of a misunderstanding of what prep should be. So I think a lot of this starts with us kind of laying that framework of why we see this happen and kind of what are the needs within prep, and then we kind of dive into each one specifically, yeah?
So why do we see the highest usage in prep? That's part of the question. And some of this comes, I think, from just what's getting passed down. It's just like everything else in bodybuilding, whether it's training or nutrition related, things are passed down from the past coach to the new athlete that then becomes a coach and gives that plan over to his client, and things just kind of translate down. So, you know, I've been given plans and seen plans where there's not an assessment done for the client that's coming in, and it's just straight into the 3 grams per week on prep of anabolics and whatever else that's going to come along with that. And there's not even along the way, a scaling of, is that more than what the client needs or not? So I think that's part of it, that there's a lot just passed down from previous coaches. And you make a point too of mismanaging preps, because I think that's a bit neglective, right? If just you just throw a bunch of gear at someone, and you're also not managing the prep on the coaching side like you really should. Gear is a way to mask the mismanaged prep, right?
Yeah, I think it's funny because this was my main point when you brought this up off camera, separate, when we originally had this discussion, going back and forth about like a specific topic. And it's funny because you see these people posting these training videos in contest prep of rest pause sets and drop sets and set extensors and these things that are making it look great for the camera. And because they're shredded or at least leaner than they are in the off season, they want that kind of content for their social media or their presence or whatever it may be. And they're kind of playing into that hardcore mentality of this is what prep looks like. And it's kind of how the training progresses across the entire prep, when in reality, prep is this long-term fatigue management where the ability to adapt to stimuli drastically drops over time. And you're just adding more and more stimuli by adding these set extensors. And then it starts to get mismanaged, and you're trying to mask that with higher drugs, and then it just becomes this mess of a situation. And it's the only way that they actually get away with it is compound loads that are so high that it's starting to mask some of the mismanagement of that other stuff. So this is where like stepping in as a coach and understanding contest prep boils down to 2 things. 1, tissue retention. 2, fatigue management over the long duration of that. And there's strategies to use within prep to do that, but filling your cup up with more and more stimuli via the training side of the situation, when that cup is being filled by higher deficit, more activity, and essentially like the potentially slightly higher stress and anxiety with the oncoming show approaching, depending on the client, you're just adding a 4th thing that's going to make that cup overflow.
Yeah. So like maybe that is part of the misconception too on the athlete side moving into prep, is that because a lot of people are excited to like, now I'm going to bring up my delts in prep and want to train that harder, and everything's getting like turned up a whole level for some people. Some people it's all the same, right? It's just a transition point. But yeah, you have other people that are trying to really improve. And so that's when you see like drug loads ramp up too, because in bodybuilding, you don't want to leave anything on the table, right? And what we could say is that in a contest prep where sleep is going to be getting deranged, which is a great recovery tool, nutrition's going down, which is another recovery tool, there's going to be a higher overall stress load, which is now also pulling away from your recovery ability. You now have a training stimulus that you're not going to be able to sustain because of that recovery bank that you have that's diminished. So that all equates to the ability to grow in prep is going to be diminished. And you're simply trying to move prep into muscle maintenance. And you're trying to scale that training stimulus to hold tissue along with managing the continued diminished recovery capacity. Now, PEDs do weigh into that, but not that vastly. Like really all the other components, I think, weigh in much heavier. So your ability to say like, now's the time I'm going to grow in prep, it's the worst time to try to grow. And really, so that should set some of the framework, is we're just really trying to maintain tissue in prep. And that should guide some of the drug choices along that way, to where if you're, we'll get into like, what does it look like to maintain tissue? But also just adding lots of drugs in prep itself could be a fatigue dynamic as well. I know we're getting into like why you might want to push your drugs as high in prep, but I think this kind of goes into the areas of why more keeps getting added in as well, because of the thought of going into prep, you're now going to be able to like really make vast improvements. And I think of training in PDs in a similar capacity, that you have a certain training stimulus that you could give, and that's going to cause some growth to potentially happen. And we see in the literature that you could really scale back training volume by a lot, give it that you're training hard, and up to like a third, you could do like 30% volume and still maintain tissue in a eucaloric state. So maintaining tissue is a lot easier than trying to grow tissue. And so I see this along with compound usage as well, to cause some type of maintenance. Like you could go really low on compound usage. We have, if you think about it, guys, if you're using, right, you could cruise on X amount of milligrams, 300 milligrams per week, and you could maintain your progress for a good chunk of time. Now moving into that calorie deficit, it likely will have start pulling away from tissue, but you could move up just a little bit in compound usage and maintain that tissue. Now I say in the off season to push past further growth potential of what you have, it might take a lot more than what you would to have to maintain that tissue. It's just kind of like once you built your house, right? You just go around clean every now and then. You might have to have the contract worker come over, put some nails in some boards, but actually like add on a whole remodel of your house. Like you're going to have a whole team come in, right? It's going to take a lot more materials to do it. A lot more inputs. So that's how I think a little bit along the compound side, and also scaling it with training too. So within a prep, I think it's just a misconception that it should be the highest usage, because that's also gonna be the hardest time to, you want to make sure you uphold that tissue.
Yeah, I think, and just to kind of add on to this, it starts to get into potential cases of presentation, and I'm gonna play devil's advocate for a second. And some of the arguments I've heard on the other side is, look at X athlete who did this in prep, right? And 9 times out of 10, X athlete who grew in prep, taking the previous 3, 5, 6 months as like pretty laid back, not really prepping. The one that comes to mind is like a Kevin Lavroni, right? And we see that, you know, elevation in training intensity and the elevation in compounds and like growing in that first into prep. And like, this is kind of where you're seeing that happen. It's like, yeah, of course you're seeing that happen, because he didn't treat his all season like his contest prep, and it's not this seamless transition. He went from barely training to now having to go into this phase where he completely rebuilds himself as the forefront of prep. And that, as a case scenario from an anecdotal perspective, isn't the case that you're dealing with 9 times out of 10, because most people are stringing along an off season extremely well, or pretty well, into a contest prep. And that's kind of where you're catching a lot of people. So it could potentially change the need when you're finding athletes who are, like, for example, like we'll use myself as an example. I have been training twice a week recently, maybe 3 times a week on a good week. And total volume for the week is probably at about that third of what I was doing. If I was to try and go back into competing, I've probably lost easy 8 to 10 pounds of tissue since I stopped trying to pursue competing. There would be that initial phase where that escalation and everything would need to push me back towards regaining that tissue that I had lost. But in order to do that, there's going to be a drug need to rebuild the scaffolding of the new portion of the house that has to come back, right? And so, sure, that primary case scenario has a need where that's called for, but that primary case scenario is few and far between in regards to how most contest preps are ran.
Yeah, I think also along with the dogma of prep and what's kind of been passed down is getting labels onto each compound of,
oh my God,
X compound does this, right? And especially this because of the case for orals. And I think that's when we see, and I think what Luke and I are talking about here is that sometimes in prep in off season, we're not talking vast differences in dosing. It can be, and we'll get into some of those situations, but where you might see is, like, some people made the argument the last several weeks of prep, say 4 to 6 weeks, you have a lot of orals come in. So you might see a higher peak dose in that later phase of a prep comparatively to your off season. For one, it might be how we're just counting the milligrams, which is kind of semantics. It's almost like, does it even really matter at this point? And does it really matter if we say you use less in prep or not? Because what matters is the end outcome anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think where you also see the misuse of compounds is that we do put labels on them, right? Halitosin will make you hard and increase strength, and then you need Provirone because that's also going to get you hard. Then Anavar is going to keep up gym performance. And all of a sudden you're using like 3-4 different orals. And if you've someone that actually have done this, you'll realize at some point, like adding these other ones in higher milligram amounts, you're not gaining this exponential advantage out of them. There really seems to be a threshold point where there's just nothing else added from, for one, a performance and muscle tissue aspect once you're that lean. And then from the aesthetic point of view, once you're like body fat and you're skinned out and you're lean, it's not making you harder through causing more body fat loss or even water manipulation in that sense, or making the skin thin. All those are very, bro type of terms and thinking around it. So you have naturals that are skin to the bone and they're not taking hardener compounds. So I think by using the labels onto compounds, you see people just start adding them in and adding them in, and the dosages exceed high, although there's not a greater benefit coming out of it. And we see these labels being carried over, especially to females, is when you'll see it even more, a little bit more clear of kind of how ridiculous it is that I've had a female say, "Hey, I need to add Anavar in to get hard." And it's like,
or Winstrol.
Or Winstrol. It's like, well, These aren't fat loss drugs. If I asked you, like, hey, if you think to yourself, we need a fat loss curve, what's your best fat loss drug you're going to pick? You're like, oh yeah, Winstrol. It's like, no, you probably would say clenbuterol or some type of lipolytic, right? So that's, yeah, taking the label aspect around, and Luger, we're going to get into it here shortly. Like, what is the true purpose of the compounds, and what should we reassess for a client for the PED based need? I think that might be the next question place. Before we just jump into, like, here's your protocol, 3 grams per week, run with it. What should we even even base that around?
So it's a multitude of various factors. So one of them for me kind of goes along with the others as like the primary one I'm making the decision on. But we can also look at age and experience level as like kind of predetermining factors of where these people land, and usage history, essentially kind of getting an idea of, you know, what has it taken previous off seasons for them to grow? how has that progression over the last 2 to 3 years looked? And then kind of going into prep, having an understanding that, you know, if this is the dose that really saw growth within an off season, we're obviously probably not going to need to go above that. And then you're going to be titrating up based on need. Now, the one that I look at is, and it kind of really makes the decision for me, is how far have they gone past their natural genetic capacity to build tissue? And that goes along with the experience portion. And for me, is probably a large decision maker in how much drugs I'm using, because an open class or an open bodybuilder who's a professional athlete who's been doing this for 15, 16 years, who is walking around at 275, 280, 290 in the off season, he's so far past his genetic capacity to build tissue just at a homeostatic environment. It's going to take drugs to hold that tissue, right? And that need for that athlete is going to be drastically higher than the YouTuber who's been bodybuilding for 2.5 years and has still not even really seen the full capacity of his development that, you know, is going to be there. So that's a big aspect for me, and starts to kind of lay the framework of where do I even start within this. And this is where taking a good history makes a lot of sense to me, especially people coming in for preps. Like if you have people coming in for prep that you haven't done their off seasons, I get a really detailed history of their previous compound usage to get an idea of what they've gone through and what they've needed to get to where they are.
Yeah, I think that gives you a good idea. And also situations change for people across, and that's when we might see dosing higher in off seasons versus preps. Because you might have someone that's super dialed in an off season, and it doesn't take a lot then in turn for them to have to grow. You might see someone that is slacking on nutrition side and training side, and you do your best as a coach to facilitate that, but sometimes you only get so much feedback. And so you see the response, and you need to drive an outcome for what they want. So in turn, drugs get pushed up because you're not seeing that response. So now you have off season where it's higher gear versus the other guy that's dialed in, not needing as much, saying that they're twins. Now, if they move into a prep, you might have one guy that all of a sudden is super dialed in. We see like gym performance take off because he's now nailing nutrition, nailing sleep. And he's just like now like, you know, that strength skyrockets. You're like, holy crap. You don't need as much now. While someone else might start falling off in prep just with, maybe stuff happens, you know, life happens, going through a divorce in prep, or who knows what it may be. And so we might see in that situation, gear having to escalate because the other recovery tools are now declining. And so we see the differences, and what we're coaching off of is what we're seeing right in front of us in that situation. So it's not to say like, you know, Luke and I are you would only always use lower gear versus your off season. That's not true. I think if we had all variables the same across a competitive career, you're likely going to see someone that's improving that gear amount continuing to escalate until they're at a pro level. And if those variables are so further developed, you might see that total dosage across all seasons start to come down because also they're not needing to grow as much either anymore. And then from like an off season to prep situation, all variables being held constant, I do think you'll see some differences in prep being a little bit lower, but not vastly lower. Okay. So I don't think we should get tied up on like how much lower. I can't believe John and Luke said that. It's like, what if it was 300 milligram difference? Like it, you know, it wouldn't matter because it's still like us coaching top level guys. It comes down to the outcome and doing what it takes to get them there. So I really see it kind of vary a lot. But in the person that is dialed in, which is kind of the rare person to be honest, that you'll see that be able to be scaled back in prep. That's in the perfect situations. Right. And that's not always what we coach.
No. And that kind of starts to bring us to, you know, what are we doing from a decision-making process to try to make those changes in prep. Right. And there's a couple things that we can start to look at, but the primary one for me is training performance. The reason that I'm looking at training performance is, to me, that's going to be the core stimulus that's driving hypertrophy and or the retentive stimulus that we need. And I'm trying to look at patterns that aren't extremely reliable on leverages. And if you've watched any of our hypertrophy podcasts where we discuss prep training, we talk about how as weight drops, we lose leverage in certain patterns, especially pressing. Our waist starts to get smaller, so it makes bracing a little bit tougher. And so we can actually see some performance metrics drop off in these patterns that are heavily reliable in that. And so I actually, in a program, will build substitutions for these patterns that would be a little bit more predictable as those start to change. But for me, those movements that require a little bit less on like the leverages side are the ones that I'm like really obsessing over from a performance standpoint, and then the subjective metrics within prep as well, because you'll actually see that ability for someone to recover start to dip before they really see that performance detriment. And for me, it's kind of like the initial signs of one, potentially we might need like a pullback week or something that's like a diet break, but two, that drug load might not be high enough for that athlete to retain that tissue at that level of training.
Yeah, I think once you get in a prep, like the what the anabolics do kind of get blurred. And just to simply state it, like for steroids, they're working on the androgen receptor to build muscle protein. It's as simple as that. That's their main thing that we're taking them for. And so to retain that protein, that tissue, the indirect measure is training performance, right? If we're maintaining muscle, you should be maintaining gym performance. And this total drug load needed, regardless of the compound, on a milligram for milligram basis, all these drugs build muscle about the same. So you just need how much total milligram do you need to accomplish that job? Then from there, we fill in what type of compounds based around that. And so that's what we're monitoring all throughout prep is what is gym performance doing? And that's guiding the total milligram dosage amount needed, even into those later stages of prep. And the reason those orals come in is because when you're four weeks out, to increase an injectable, it's going to take a little bit for that to go to work, while an oral can go to work immediately. So that's when it's justifiable of like, oh, this is when we should be playing in an oral that gets along well with the client. I would say the most benign choices first that can boost up that training performance, which in turn is allowing us to maintain tissue. So that's guiding it. And I think throughout that, like once you work with a client, you're going to have a really good idea of like where these ranges are. And we'll see, I think from prep to prep, those dosages are going to need to creep up, because if they're bigger and like Luke said, they're moving farther and farther past that natural potential. It's going to take a lot more to hold it. Now there is a question around like, what about the aesthetics? Does it bring something extra beyond just muscle retention? And I would say yes, but I think that makes it a little bit more complicated. And that's, I think people get tied up on the little nuance of what else they bring, even aesthetically, that's guiding all the main choices around it. Because, you know, with the aesthetics, like, yes, like androgens do have an aspect around fat loss that do occur, but that's not their main mechanism of how they work. So they could make you a little harder in sense by making fat loss be more productive, but that's not the best choice to use them for. As far as how else could a drug make you hard? Well, if it's not losing body fat, it's not going to change your skin in a sense. It has to be around water retention, right? So how does it modulate water retention? Well, the big issue really in prep is cortisol and fatigue. And that's what I see so often. We're just running through a state of accumulating fatigue. You're increasing cortisol levels. Cortisol acts on the mineral corticoid receptor and drives up water retention. So we see guys' legs start getting blurry from cardio and body weight starting to move up. It's not that we need to bring in the hardeners to shift that water balance. It's more so that we need to manage the fatigue side. Now, some people might bring up, well, trenbolone really shines in a prep scenario, because of it's not its actions on the androgen receptor, but it's more interactions with the glucocorticoid receptor and how it could cause some aspects to manage cortisol. And very well so. Like it does a great job at preventing muscle tissue breakdown. And that's a reason to deploy it. But as far as like, should we be deploying it to manage fatigue from cortisol rise from poor sleep and also poor training management? No. That we should just manage training or, you know, manage fatigue. Also, sleep's already poor. Trenbolone's not going to fix sleep. So it's not working through those mechanisms to make you hard. Now, people bring up maybe estrogen, right? You're offsetting the androgen to estrogen ratio, which usually for most people in prep, you're already running so high amount of androgen that you're already pulled out everything offsetting. You could from that. And if anything, let's just go to the root cause, like lower testosterone a little bit to modulate that. Yeah. And then we could also talk about maybe using
synergies.
Yeah. There's synergies, also an ARB to help manage some of the aldosterone increase that might be there from drug usage. Absolutely. And then, right, like Luke said, like these androgens also play into other synergies, making other compounds more effective, like can make thyroid hormone more effective, growth hormone more effective, clenbuterol. Uh-huh. So those are some indirect aspects of what they do. But again, it's not the main reason we're using those drugs, and that's to maintain tissue, and we're looking at training performance to help guide those decisions.
I love the synergies conversation because when we look at where people financially budget themselves, they tend to leave more money on the table for prep than they do in off season. And so we'll have access to things like growth hormone and contest prep that maybe they couldn't afford in off season because they've been saving the money to use it throughout a contest prep. And so this could further drive another reason why it would take less drugs to retain tissue if we have something like that in play that is going to be working synergistically with these androgens that we're using. And it's going to allow us to retain that tissue even further. And then if we get into like the aesthetic side of it, like GH's role and influence on like renin-angiotensin from a fullness perspective is a classic example of how we can affect aesthetics with a comp or a drug in play that is going to affect that. And the reason I bring that up is I have a peak next week that I am leaving GH in all the way through. Braden is one of those guys that gets gnarly shredded and as hard as fucking table. And in order to keep his visuals full and looking that hard, I have to keep growth hormone in play all the way through. And dropping it actually makes his visuals look worse. And thank goodness for the increase in the weight cap because I don't have to drop it to make weight now. It's going to allow us to run just that much of a smoother peak, which is a prime example of a synergy not only affecting the need for retaining tissue in prep, but also how it can affect the aesthetics of what we look like on stage.
Yeah. Yeah. That's that aspect around fullness. Even with those two, like say you're bringing clenbuterol, right? You now have a compound that does drive fat loss, but also has some influence around, preventing muscle tissue breakdown as well.
Yep.
So you usually have kind of a drug list that you're using in prep. Maybe you're using injectable L-carnitine. There is some synergies there with growth hormone and the androgens to where you might make a case where you have all these pathways you're now utilizing to cause like muscle to retain that you might use lower androgens. Now, a lot of times you just, we're bodybuilders, you just using the same androgens and adding more things in on top of it. But it goes back to the point. Just look at your training performance and let that guide some of those decisions around it.
I agree.
So beyond that, I think, you know, once you have this milligram amount, you know, sorted out, like for Luke and I, like exact compound choices, it's really guiding around side effect management. Mm-hmm. And they do differentiate milligram basis, milligram for milligram on the side effects they do present. So I think you need to manage your prep with the idea too that we don't want someone getting so toxic that it's starting to impact the tail end of prep too, where digestion's poorly influenced by running like five different orals, you know, or sleep is impacted that much by using certain compounds. It's some people like, I must use trenbolone. It's like, well, if trenbolone's causing so many side effects, that's taken away, like I mentioned earlier, from sleep and driving anxiety, increasing stress, that's not going to benefit your physique. Just use less or fill in that milligram total with some other type of compound. And that's really how we would guide using compound choices. And it's not that complicated. Like, look at most cycle design, and it's usually like two or three compounds, maybe an oral there. And that's really it. And where you see the craziest shit done is usually by the amateur guys that also just aren't close, and they're just abusing drugs and believing that that's the route. But if you look at like some of these top guys, what they're doing, and they're like thinking that that is it by using a ton of drugs, and it's not. Don't get me wrong, it's a good amount, but still, it's very simple design. So I think another point to bring up here is that all the research chemicals that are out, no one's using those at the high level. Like, you don't see all these guys using GW whatever or XYZ 59, you know, they're not using that. It's very, very simple. So it does make the risk lower, makes the assessment of what does what easier too. And you need to think about that from a coaching perspective, that the more drugs you put in, the more complication you're going to have around sorting out side effects when they do arise. Even top pros have issues getting quality gear sometimes. So if you have seven different, you know, steroids in place and something's not adding up, you're like, gosh, well, which one is it? Now, if you had less compounds, it just makes the variables a bit simpler.
It's funny you say this. I actually had this case a couple weeks back. I typically try for most people to have them pull labs somewhere in that like 7 to 9 week out-ish mark just to double check this exact situation of like, are these drugs putting us in an androgen to estrogen ratio that we typically see in the off-season setting as well? And I had a guy who, you know, visually was changing. The visual changes weren't exactly what I was expecting. He was running into some fatigue and that shouldn't have been there. And he had labs pulled, and sure enough, that estrogen was higher, much higher at that dosing that we had relative to where it was in off season. And all it took was modifications to stack design. We deployed some, he had a Remedex on hand, so deployed a Remedex quickly. And we saw those subjective metrics massively improve. And he clipped off like, over the next week and a half to 2 weeks, he's clipped off like 6 pounds. So it's like, you're starting to see that come to fruition, and, you know, ways that you can check yourself, because, on paper, it could all look perfect, but you just brought up the classic example of, you know, we have these drugs in play. Are they the same drugs that we were using in all season? You know, you hope so, but, you know, sometimes it's not. And you can add just like a checkpoint that allows you to kind of get a viewpoint of what's actually going on underneath the hood.
You know, another point you brought up, other like the Kevin Lavroni kind of example of like growing into the show. And I think it's another point of like, you could look at what the pros do, and some of them are going to be like, oh, wow, that's a lot less than what I thought it would be. But I also think you're going to see some pros, because you have to consider what our schedule looks like for the Olympia, and even consider like if they're a weight class athlete or not, that sometimes there's really short off season periods for these guys, to where you might be running like whatever 20, 24 week prep. Then you have time where a lot of guys like clean out for a month and maybe some stuff comes back in. But a lot of these guys might be cruising most of this very, very short off season. And then their main time to really go all in is on prep. So I think that's when you might see some guys that are really pushing the dosages high. But the rest of the year, they're taking like a pretty low dose approach. But that's not to extrapolate that out and apply it to the amateur that has extended off season periods, where they don't need to run that type of dynamic. Because it is tough as a pro when a lot of your year is on prep and you still need to make the improvements. You're going to have to scale that a lot differently. But regardless, I think there still might be a bit, there's still a better way to go about it, in my opinion, than just not doing anything all year and then throwing the kitchen sink at like kind of the worst time to do it. I think you could go like, you know, the area under the curve for the year, like manage it to where there's a little bit more use in the off season, and then you're not having to use as much like throughout prep. But I think that's a scenario that might be seen and try to be copied.
Yeah, I agree. 100%. Yeah. I feel like we've really touched on that.
Yeah, I think that covers it. And so just to like give you the simple like application, all this assessment for like using PEDs, it's all needs based. So you need to assess where someone is at their current moment, where they're coming from. Then as you're watching them, the outcome, the risk that they're willing to take and accept, that is all guiding those decisions around how much the total milligram amount is. And it might change. Like, it might be higher in off seasons, it might be lower in preps. There might be preps where it needs to go higher. And so that's where we stand, Luke and I. It's around basing what needs to happen for the outcome and within that risk profile. So you can't put a stamp on it like, always use lower amounts in prep. That's not it. Our real approach here is that we're promote assessing the needs of the client to drive that outcome within the risk profile. And then from there, once you know these total milligram amounts that we're adjusting, we're just basing that, building out those compounds around the side effect profile. And then it's just rinse and repeat. We monitor the outcome and adjust accordingly. And it's relatively as simple as that for how we're building out cycle designs throughout prep and into off seasons. And then once you have this kind of mapped out for client that you worked with through a prep and off season, you have a pretty good idea of where they stand for directions that they need to go with total milligram amounts and even compound selections. So anyway, thank you everyone for tuning in, and we will talk to you next week.